Blog Talk Radio.
Good, Rich. I had the opportunity to talk to Tim just a week or so ago.
I actually fought against him in his first collegiate bout. He was a little bigger than I was. He was 6'3", he was around 208 in that bout. And he won by decision, beaten by decision at Penn State. And then the following year, he came back, won the national title at 195. He beat a couple good kids from the Naval Academy in Simon Lane. He beat this really tough kid from Santa Clara. His name is escaping me right now, but he won the national title. But he went on and he fought in the Philadelphia Golden Gloves. And the gentleman that he lost to in the finals in 1999 with the highly crowded amateur prospect, and they thought he was going to go pro, and I don't know if he ever did. I think it was Frank Walker. And then Tim and I would see each other occasionally. He only lives about 10 minutes from me outside of Philadelphia. I hadn't seen him in a few years, and I bumped into him at the Rocky Balboa movie audition back in 2005, and we exchanged phone numbers, and, we started joking around and talking, and then, we're fun careers, and I came to find out that he was only living about 10 minutes from me, so, I came over to my 30th birthday party back in 06, him and his wife came over for the, big brother Carlos Baldemir fight, in late 06, we went to the, Gosh Baldemir fight together in Atlantic City. So, he's a real good guy, and when he called me the other week, he was talking to me about his business that he was trying to get started up. He was getting his certification to do insurance, and he's looking to get his own office. And the one thing he said to me was, it's a shame that a lot of professional fighters don't have good insurance policies. And what he said to me almost stuck a chord in me, because that very day, a good friend of ours, the Iceman John Scully, had sent out an email about a fight we covered a few weeks ago where one of the participants of Travis had passed away. And this was a young guy, didn't have much going on in his career, and did not have any insurance. And what happened is now this guy's family is struggling to cope. He was the breadwinner. And he came out, instead of, him bringing money into the family, they're trying to provide funeral costs for him. And what Tim said to me, a lot of fighters don't have, insurance, and he goes, that's what I'm looking to do. And he had, met with guys like Prince Bobby Ajamu, who had fought Roy Jones. He was actually going to meet Randy Griffin, who had fought Felix Sturm, and just to, meet with them and try to work out, situations with them to make sure these guys are covered. Because, as we all know, boxing is a very dangerous sport, and, there is a high risk of injury every time you lace the gloves on, every time you come to the gym. And his one goal is to, obviously the fight game, he can't make it any safer, but he can help protect, the fighters outside of the ring.
Right, and actually, you mentioned that, I saw there was the other guy that we do the MMA ad name with. There's a new company out, I actually have it up here somewhere, XSI Insurance, Extreme Sports Insurance. So they're trying to cover mixed martial arts and boxing, so it might be another company that that Tim should network with anyway. They do a lot of other stuff too, mountain biking and motocross and all that kind of crazy, skateboarding and everything. Like the X Games insurance.
Yeah.
But, as I was thinking about and looking at that and thinking about, what we were talking about a little bit with John Mallard about the Fighters Union. Funny enough, I did a search for some URLs. Web addresses where you could possibly, kind of put the word out that you're looking to start a fighter's union. I find that there's actually like two or three websites that are registered by one of our former guests, Big Country, Roy Nelson.
Yeah, sure.
So he's actually even thought about it already. And,
right.
And it's funny because John Howard said, you got to get some big fighters. So I already know he's in league, so. I got his number somewhere. If I ever wanted to really get started with it, I'm sure he'd help out.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's like it's a big fighters to do that, because, you know, a lot of times what you're going to happen there, a lot of the smaller fighters are going to do it, they're going to get
blackballed. Right.
You know, or you want to get used to it, well, then fine, like, no promoter, no manager, you know, will help you out. But if you get some big fighters in there, and even if now you get guys that got to stay aware that were starting their own promotional companies to battle the big two, really, and Don King and Bob Arum, Top Rank. You know, they form their own promotional company to be more fighter friendly. That maybe possibly into the future. You never know.
Hopefully.
Well, of course, anything that I think can help the fighters is always a good thing. I know I've talked to the Iceman about it. You know, a couple times. You know, he copies me on a lot of his emails, and you know, he's always looking to be out there and, you know, help people. And Rich, I don't remember if we talked about this last week or not, but what Iceman said on his one Facebook posting, ripping apart Panama Lewis.
I don't know if we talked about that. Well, you know,
Iceman has that funny sense of humor. You know, he's one of the good guys in the sport of boxing. You know, he's a guy you can really look up to. Like, would always fight hard, and he's a good trainer. And he's a good ambassador for the sport. And the one thing he wrote, he goes, I hate when people write stuff like, don't you know who I am, or you should listen to me because, he goes, I don't say that because, you know, I don't feel that I'm more important than anybody, or I'm better than anybody. He goes, until I watch the salt in the ring, he goes, I can come up here and say that I am a much better person than Panama Lewis.
Okay.
I don't know if I said that last week or not, but I remember I was telling a few people about it.
It's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, we do have a lot to talk about, and I hate to start off with MMA and piss you off, but there was a big fight this past weekend between the female face of MMA, which got a little bloody and beaten by the newcomer. From overseas, when I came from down south, I guess she's from Brazil. Gina Carano lost her first fight, got knocked out in the very last second of the round. And interestingly enough, it was one of those fights where you know, they had to go to the replay to convince everybody that it was stopped at the right time. You know, they shouldn't have gone another round because, interestingly enough, I just looked on BoxRec. Now they have the stories on the front page, the upcoming stories. Well, 1 hour ago, this story went out that the Nevada regulators have approved replay, instant replay for boxing and mixed martial arts. So in the future, if you know, a controversial call like that you know, comes into play in Nevada, at least, they'll have the referee look at it and decide in instances whether, you know, it was stopped correctly, or whether, you know, it was a low blow or a headbutt instead of a punch, or, you know, things like that that can be looked at. The referee is going to be the ultimate decision maker, just like in the NFL. But getting back to the MMA fight, Gina Carano did really well. She hung in there, but you could just tell it was just a crazy, you know, weight advantage. I mean, not weight advantage, but muscle advantage, I guess.
Physicality.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even fight. I knew it was on, but, you know, I wasn't available that night. But I saw pictures of that girl. I remember that picture you sent me. And is her name Cyborg?
Yep.
She is a cyborg. I mean, she scares me. She really does. But I mean, from what I saw, was, I mean, just physically overmatched her. I wouldn't even call her, you know, a standard human being. She's like the female Drago.
And, you know, she's just, she's only got one thing that, really, you know, you could say is not good for her career in America anyway, and that's that she doesn't speak English, but. doesn't speak English
right,
well.
Right.
So, I mean, that's something that Gina had going for her. She was the pretty face, and she spoke very good English, obviously. She's from America. So it's going to be, I don't know if she's going to be succeeded, so to speak, as the women's face of MMA, but she definitely, she's not going to have that undefeated stigma. And she got that wake-up call that, you know, just because you're a woman doesn't mean you can take a break or, you know, not train hard enough or, you know, take advantage of, you know, your physique if it's not, you know, like a typical muscular MMA fighter who's a male. You know, because she's got that type of body that, you know, you can't really tell where her muscles are. It's like they're all hidden. And, you know, she's got the endurance and she's got the skill and all that, but she looks just like a regular woman, you know, who's in shape. She doesn't look like she's, you know, on steroids or anything or, you know, or pumping a lot of iron.
I mean, different people have different body weights. Now, MMA is a little different with boxing because, you know, you use a lot more, you know, physicality in the wrestling and the grappling. With boxing, means like you need as much snap on your punches as possible. So, like, a lot of times you see locally muscle down fighters, like, not guys that you're going to only feel you were cut and torn, but guys that were like, really, but guys like Brock Lesnar would have no trouble at boxing match because of, because, you know, massive size. And I remember a guy from the Naval Academy, he was gone by the time you got there, Rich, but you lined him up next to a guy that was a heavyweight, and he was looked bigger, and he was 156 pounds. But the thing was, he had, I mean, he was pumped to bone, but he wasn't heavy, he wasn't fat, and, you know, he was just one of those physical creatures. For other guys, the guy that was, you know, skinny as a rail, had not 1 ounce of musculature on him, but he could, you know, the 125 pounder, he could almost knock out a 170 pounder.
Yeah, you never can tell. She's one of those people, too, where looks can be deceiving. Obviously, she's a very pretty girl, and she can beat the hell out of him. So.
Right,
yeah. Anyway, that was a pretty good card. Ratings came back very positive for Strikeforce, and Strikeforce, I've noticed, has been picking up, you know, the strays, I guess you could call them, MMA fighters out there that the UFC hasn't scooped up. Strikeforce has been making a push in the last couple of weeks to pick up a few more guys. One of the most recent ones was Paul Bradley. We've had a bunch of stories about him in the blog, and we just had one last night I put in there about the signing, and he's another heavyweight type guy, not too big, but big enough, could just as good a fumble, nice. Anyway, the whole Strikeforce event was really good. Another one that was a surprise was Renato Babalu Sobral, a UFC outcast, who I was talking about last week, why he got thrown out was a rear naked choke that he held on to too long. And this time, he didn't even have a chance to try any submission. Degard Mousasi just totally destroyed him. And it was great boxing. You would have loved it if you watched it. But it was just incredible. He just overwhelmed him with punches. It was over in like 30 seconds. And that was one of the best male fights on the card. There was also another fight with Fabricio Werdum, who got in a little trouble early against Mike Kyle, and then came back and put him in a submission. It was a guillotine choke, and that was that. And there's a couple other fights on the card that were pretty good. The one that went the distance, or almost went the distance, was really good. It was a guy who had given Gilbert Melendez his only loss of his career. And Melendez came in there trying to avenge his loss. He's much more improved than he was in the first fight. And just, it was an unbelievable fight. I mean, these guys had some intensity. The other guy that fought him was Ishida. He was like a Japanese guy, very crafty guy, and a tough as nails. I mean, this guy took a beating before he was stopped. The ref stopped the fight. But that was a real good fight to watch. But other than that, there really wasn't much else going on in MMA circles. The big boxing matches, I don't know if you mentioned the Roy Jones Jr. fight. That went off pretty well. Roy got his win against Jeff Lacy pretty easily, from what I understand. That one raised a little red flag in the streaming world because Roy Jones Jr. sued Ustream, which is actually, I think, one of those ones that we were trying to use for our show at one point. I forget. Anyway, Ustream.tv is one of those sites that streams live events, I guess. 2,300 people or something saw the Roy Jones Jr. fight on Ustream for free. So Roy Jones Jr. turned around and sued them at the promoter. So that kind of raised my eyebrows. They're claiming they're protected on Ustream, is claiming they're protected under some kind of copyright protection, what they call it. It was like a safe harbor thing. Something like that. So they're still claiming immunity because of that. But Go Fight Live was actually putting out a feed that was live that people were paying for. So apparently they did really well on not getting it out, or not letting anybody else distribute it other than Ustream, because I haven't been able to find a copy anywhere. My usual source that I go to for the UFC fights didn't cover it, of course. They were too busy with the Strikeforce thing, but they have a video vault, it's called, and it wasn't even in there. So they definitely did a really good job making sure that not too many people got to see it for free.
Yeah, like I said, I just followed the blog online, just to keep with what was going on. And of course, on the undercard battle, Jason Lipsow had a third round stoppage over Furkan Klimbo. Danny Green out of Australia had a fifth round stoppage over Julio Cesar Dominguez. And now it looks like you're going to see Danny Green and Roy Jones Jr. Play down in Australia. So Green's going to have the home field advantage there. And Peter Flores with a fourth round TKO over Cristiano Mendoza. Mendoza hurt his shoulder in that fight. Flores is not much of a good fighter. He's not much of a knockout puncher. And going to the main event, but I'll follow it, on the blog, the online blog. And going into the fight, I wasn't really expecting a whole lot out of Jeff Lacy. I think, as I said on last week's show, I love the guy. I think he's past his prime. I mean, he took a pretty horrendous beating 3 years ago from Joe Calvage over in England. I mean, that beat up real bad, and he's never been the same. He's got shoulder problem. And they said basically all he was doing was coming forward, trying to get Jones' chest, and just soaking up punches the whole time. And on the blog, there was on the victor, every round, starting in the fifth or sixth round, that got over the guy running the blog, was like, doesn't look like Lacy has a whole lot left. Not looking good for Lacy. And then after that, maybe the sixth or seventh round, every round, the referee really should think about stopping this. The corner really should think about stopping this. The man has nothing left. And finally, after 10 rounds, 10 relatively one-sided rounds, the corner stopped it, which was, a very, very, very good move. And, there was maybe no reason even let it go on that long, from what I heard.
Yeah, other than that, the only fights that I know went on for big fight anyway, I guess you could say, the Friday night fight turned out to be a real bust, and it was pretty bad, because first of all, they had a bunch of heavyweights fight each other, and all of them were mismatched, so the fight ended very early, and then you get to the main event, and Vivian Harris is in the main event. And in the second round against the guy, they clash heads, and Vivian Harris goes over to the corner, he's talking to the doctor, next thing you know, he's on the ground. He passed right out, and, he had obvious brain damage or some kind of concussion.
Yeah, I heard about that. They took him right to the hospital, didn't they?
Yep, strapped him right to a gurney, and they took him backstage first, and then they let him recover a little bit, and then I guess he walked over to the hospital.
Okay. I didn't see the card. I remember reading about, the head clash, and then with the women, out on the stretcher. I was like, of course, that always raises an eyebrow because of the concern, we still don't ever want to see a fighter get hurt, in or out of the ring. Another thing regarding that, we just talked about the clash ahead, and a few minutes ago you were talking about the Nevada using replay. They mentioned that specifically because of the fight in California a few weeks ago between Nate Campbell and Timothy Bradley. And they're still talking about that. I was reading an article about Don King today. Thank you, by the way, happy 78th birthday, Don. But they were talking about that today. He's still pissed off, about that botched call where, Campbell was cut by an obvious headbutt and they called it a punch and just stopped the fight. And then it was like, and they wanted to secure a win to Bradley, and it should have been a no contest. I mean, I think Bradley would have won that fight anyway. A little younger, a little fresher, a little bigger. But still, I mean, Campbell had a punch of a chance, and it was like, it was all like a taken right from him.
Yeah,
not much
you can do there without replay, so.
Yeah, exactly. Discretion of the referee, sometimes he sees what he wants to see.
Definitely. We'll have to see how that works and how it goes. But until then, I guess
Until then, what are we going to do?
Yeah. Well, it's actually, it's only Nevada, so it's going to be like an experimental type thing like that. WBC open scoring type deal.
Open scoring, that's a disaster.
I don't know if they still do that. I bet not, but
I think on some championship cards, I'm not 100% sure of it. I've only seen it like three or four fights. The most fun, I knew they were going to have it, but it ended in like two rounds. So like, we would have had open scoring, but you're not going to see that happen now because fight's over.
Well, he said within a month, this is going to be implemented in Nevada, this instant replay. And it's going to be for MMA and boxing. So both sports will get to benefit from it. And we'll see how it gets inaugurated. Be the right word. Who ends up needing it first? Las Vegas or wherever in Nevada they spring it on us. But then I imagine it's going to take a while to have a fight that is actually going to qualify for it. You don't have to.
Yeah, of course. Never has any place on the judging, which is unfortunate sometimes.
Yeah,
I just wanted to, I just saw a Facebook publicly, and I just wanted to, make a mention of a fight tomorrow night and throw a shout out to a good friend of ours. A good friend of ours is fighting tomorrow night down in West Virginia, Chuck Magaccio. And just put his weight in. He's going to be weighing at 174 and a half. He feels great. And he's fighting the guy, Tommy Carpenti, southpaw, who won that much ago. 17-1-1 with 11 knockouts. And Chuck is 15-0-2 with 5 knockouts, so it's a relatively even match fight here. And this is for the WBA Fed Central for the light heavyweight title.
Right. Yeah, it's right in front of me. I didn't even realize that. I'm sitting here waiting to talk about the Oliver McCall fight that's listed right before there. That one on Boxrec here, and it's at the Waterfront Palace, the Waterfront Place Hotel in Morgantown, West Virginia. Tommy Carpenti, the name sounds familiar. I'm pretty sure he's one of those guys that I interviewed way, way back when we were just a MySpace page. And, pretty interesting story. But, Oliver McCall, as I mentioned, is fighting a heavyweight match. It's the only 10-round fight on the card. The rest of them are going to be all 4-rounders. And it's going to be in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. And Oliver is 52-9 with 37 knockouts and still fighting. He's fighting Franklin Lawrence, 12-1, 7 knockouts and 2 draws. Oliver, he was born in 65. So that would make him.
No,
I do remember him beating Lennox.
Knocked out Lewis the first time. I think that was in 1994, maybe. Knocked out Lewis with a rookie right hand. Then was for a couple of years later, I think it was 97. And Lewis was like,
Intercontinental super middleweight title. That's a mouthful. belts did you win again, dude?
I can't remember.
There's also one other fight. Well, actually, there's a few other good fights on there. Looks like Zolt Bedak has a brother, Cal Bedak, flyweight. He's going to be fighting 4-0. He's going to be fighting a guy who's 7-30. Not even going to make a stab at pronunciating that name. Not really. The guy's only 4-0, so. Guy's 7-30. At least has more wins and a lot more experience, so can't really call that a mismatch. The next card underneath it over in Abruzzo, Italy, has a main
event. That's where my father was from.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a mismatch for you at featherweight. Gian Piero Contestabile, who's 13-1, versus Luigi Montagna, who's 1-16.
That's my count.
And then the other fight on the card, Ivan Fiorletta, and you can tell, you know, it's like the guys from the hometown, I think, are the ones that are getting these fights. But anyway, Fiorletta is 23-5 with 2 draws, 7 knockouts, and he's fighting Esteban Higuitas, who's 1-5. Another mismatch. But other than that, we have... we have some much better, very good, very well-matched fights to talk about. Of course, we had the huge card. I guess let's try to find it here. Before we get to that, there's one in Mexico. Baja Mexico.
One of the cards that I want to touch base on, real quick. Really odd circumstances to it. This is supposed to be in California, and it was a great spoiler of the Contender Season 2. It was originally supposed to play Anthony the Messenger Thompson out of Philadelphia. Anthony Thompson, a very highly touted prospect, had a little bit of bad luck so far in his young career, but still, fighting up the ranks, a ranked contender. And he's getting ready to fight Greg Spurrier, and they kept saying, I was reading the report of the promoter for the fight, and he's generally pretty new. And they were saying that Anthony Thompson was demanding everything, in advance. He's demanding the person again. He's demanding, all these extra special perks. And then it was a couple of days later, he sent him a message saying, I'm retiring, I'm not fighting. Now they got to get all this money back from them. They got the whole weird situation. They put the other gentleman in there, and he has a relatively decent record. He's from Canada. His name's Albert the Punisher Onolotos. He's 18-0. It's sort of knockout. The great career was 25-11. So it's going to be no easy touch. Great career down a handful. He might be the underdog now. Other card I want to touch base on, a big card down in Houston, Texas, Saturday night on HBO between Juan the Baby Bull Diaz coming off that knockout loss to Juan Manuel Marquez back in February, and he's fighting Paulie Malignaggi. Malignaggi coming off that loss last November to Ricky Hatton. No, excuse me, I'm sorry, Malignaggi at one point in February won the decision over Christopher Fernandez. But it was a big fight with Andrew Chan in November. So I know I was reading a lot of stuff for Arsene John Stelly's card, and there's a kid out of Philadelphia does some fight reporting, Jimmy Keith, they call him. And he does a lot of fight reporting, and he put a questionnaire out there, which thinks he's going to win. And it's cool right now. A lot of people are saying that Jimmy Keith is going to overwhelm Malignaggi. He's going to win that one. Other people are saying that Keith with him. He's not the same guy that he was. And they're picking the Apollo down boxing. And also on the card, we got a title fight featherweight between Malcolm Klassen and Robert the Ghost Guerrero. Klassen, the defending champion, out of where he's from South Africa. 24-4 with 15 knockouts. Guerrero is 24-1 with 17 knockouts. Our friend Danny Garcia is on the card. Danny's playing only a 6-rounder this fight. So a little bit of a step down. He's trying to keep busy. 13-0 late knockout. Taking on Oscar Leon, who's You know, we got to a higher in William Jr., not a bad player. He took in those three knockouts. He's played as Jose Matthews. He's got 18 and 7, 6 knockouts, and a little step up for Ida. That's a nice card they got down in Houston.
Yeah, it should be a good show. We wish Danny well, of course. Should he do all right? Looks like of course. There's not an undefeated guy in that undercard.
Yeah.
8-0, 10-0, 5-0, 16-0, 13-0 with Danny. A lot of undefeated guys. Kylan Williams, as you just mentioned, he's undefeated too, 10-0.
Think we should try to give Jim a call?
One more boxing card, and then I'll give him a call. There's one that I wanted to mention down in Baja, California, Sur, Mexico. At the Auditorio Unidad Deportiva. It sounds like the auditorium you go to be deported. It's going to be on Mexico Azteca Television and the United States Azteca America Television, if you want to watch it. Because they're great records anyway. I don't know if it's going to be great, translated into great fights, but it sounds like it's very well matched. Off the top, we have, obviously, it's going to be lightweight guys, but we've got super featherweights Sergey Guliakevich, who's 26-1 with 12 knockouts. And he's fighting Humberto Moro Gutierrez, 25-1 with 19 knockouts and one draw. That's for the WBC super featherweight interim title. And then we get all the way down to minimum weight. Raul Garcia is undefeated at 26-0 with 16 knockouts and one draw. And he's fighting Sammy Gutierrez. I don't know if he's related to Humberto, but it would make sense. He's 21-4 is Gutierrez with 2 draws and 12 knockouts to his credit. And then the most seasoned guy on the card, Jose Luis Castillo, 58-9 with 50 knockouts and 1 draw. He's fighting Christian Solano, 22-16 with 4 knockouts, or with 4 draws, sorry, and 16 knockouts. And then rounding it off, we have a light middleweight contest between Saul Roman, 30-5 with 25 knockouts, and Jose Luis Cruz, 37-6 with 30 knockouts, 2 draws.
Rich, I want to get your opinion on the point here. I want you to pick a winner for the 25 fight down of Puerto Rico. We got Marcos Leonardo Jimenez, keep fighting Daniel Jimenez. Marcos Leonardo was 16-1 with 10 knockouts. Daniel's 18-3 with 10 knockouts. I'm just going to win Jimenez or Jimenez.
I think Jimenez.
I'm going to take Jimenez. There was a player, I forget where he's from, he was playing a couple years ago, and his name was Hussein. I'm really imagining speaking with somebody.
Tim's got a call here.
Tim's a call. It's right back, all right? So let's see how long it's calling right there.
Yeah. Okay. There should be a dad in the music. What are we doing?
Automatic voice message
to start with
2 6 7 8 7 2 8. Oh,
here you go.
Yeah,
I reach out his phone number, so we want to have that over the air.
Your call is facilitated through an automatic voice message system. At the tone, please record your message.
Say something good, Chuck.
When you're recording, you may hang up or call the multiple options.
Hey, Tim, it's Tony. I'm here with Rich, or as you call him, Rabble Rabble and Rich Bergeron. It's around 10 to 9. We're doing the show right now. We're seeing if you'd be available to do the interview tonight. If you get a chance, you can either give me a call. I won't be able to answer, but I know you're available. We're going to wait a few minutes. We're going to cover some more boxing and MMA stuff, and then we'll try you back in maybe 5 or 6 minutes, and then hopefully you'll be able to get you on. All right? How's that sound, Rich?
Good. Very good recording.
I'm awesome.
I'm going to have you leave all my messages from now on.
Well, I work doing this shit for doctors, so, you know, I just try not professional when it's called for them.
Well, that leaves us with mixed martial arts to cover still, so we might as well go down the list of what's coming up there. We have, first of all, tomorrow night in Sydney, Australia, we have CFC 10 Light Heavyweight Grand Prix Finals, and James T. Huna is going to be facing Anthony Perosh for the Light Heavyweight Championship. Cage fighting. Championships. Jake Short versus Luke Picklum. Bernardo Trecco versus Rob Hill. Lucas Brown versus Felice Venue. Jacob O'Connell versus Justin Murray. Michael Mortimer versus Keon Thom. Jason Harris versus Robert Lucida. Mark Sabaniev versus Hugh Cameron. And Leo Diaz versus Nick Goodwin on the undercard there. Takes care of Australia. We go to Sao Mateus, Portugal for WUFCC World Ultimate Full Contact Championship 15. And, no idea who's on the card. It's not listed. So you'll have to find out for yourself if you want to go. But it's on August 22nd, 2009. I don't know if we have any Portugal listeners. But we do. I guess you'll probably find it better over there.
Hey, Rick, so what's the hard return event we used to have?
I don't think so, actually. That's a good thing you mentioned that, because I got to look back into figuring that out. I'm sure there's got to be something. I think there was some kind of thing where it was working and then it stopped working, so I'll have to figure that out. It's always a good idea.
Well, yeah, why not? Why don't you give us an update on how you're training, what's going on?
Well, my trainer has taken advantage of the very nice weather around here. And he's been flying back and forth from here and going to Cape Cod for the last couple weeks. So I haven't seen much of him. I haven't seen much of the gym. But I have been putting in my 5-mile run every day now, my longest run I've decided to do every day now. And it never gets any easier because I'm wearing layers. And it seems like even though like yesterday was 91 degrees for high, but it was just barely humid. So I lost about 8 pounds in water weight just on the run yesterday. And today, I go out, and it's supposed to be 85 for high, and it feels twice as humid. So I lost about the same amount, 8 pounds, but, I mean, it never gets any easier. I don't know why. It's a struggle every time. And it's not as much as the lungs anymore. You know, the lungs are fine, obviously, but... you know, it pretty much duplicates that feeling that you get when you're about 2 minutes into the first round, first, second, or third, any round, actually, and you start really feeling, you know, how tired you are.
So I'm hoping, John, obviously, I mean, I'm not doing as much drill right now, but I'll get back into the running a little bit. And, you know, just what you're saying, when it was like 91 the other day, you know, it keeps your head. You know, in last week, when it was one of the hottest days of the year, it was touching about 100 down here with what they call the heat index. I don't know what the hell that is. I guess it's the temperature plus humidity. And me, like the Einstein that I am, you know, I'm in a, you know, sleeveless sweatshirt, a sleeveless zip-up sweatshirt, and, you know, baseball hat. So they looked at me, like, and I got home, I said, yeah, I'm getting soft in my old age. He said, day like today, I'd be out in a fully sleeved zip-up sweatshirt, sweatpants, sometimes I'd be wearing two sweatshirts, and one of those winter pull-down hats.
Yeah, I don't go with the winter pull-down hat, but I usually wear a baseball cap and a hooded sweatshirt, and I vary as to when I put up the hood.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm on the trail, I'll leave it up. I don't like to leave it up when I'm on the street. There's about a 0.8-mile stretch where I go to the trail and then back from the trail that I usually keep the hood off so I can see traffic. But while I'm on the trail, usually I try to keep it on. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic of where I run because it's along the high-tension power lines. And there's a lot of sand in certain places. So, after like today, there was a little bit of rain. So, yeah, it's a little easier running the sand when it's a little wet. But days when it's really hot or a couple days in a row when it gets hot, not only is it harder to run the sand, but it's the hotter it is and the drier it is, the more bogged down you get in the sand. So... It's the first part of my run, I go uphill for a good little stretch, and then it's about on the trail after I go downhill on the street, and then I get to the trail, and I go a little uphill, and it's all grass from there to the end of that first section of the run. Then I turn back, and I come back up that hill, and I go up the other trail, which is where all the sand is. So I get the worst part of the run kind of right in the middle, that second stretch of, you know, up and back that trail, because there's a street on the other side of these trails, so there's basically like a fork in the road, and then there's a Y. You know, there's two different ways you can go. So I go to the left, and then I come back, and then I go to the right, and I come back, and then I come back down to the street, and I go up the hill. I call it Heartbreak Hill, because at the end of that run, you know, it feels like Heartbreak Hill. And one thing that always gets me through it, if I just think about, you know, that last few of the run, you know, where I can take the sweatshirt off, and I try to just, last couple of days, it's been so hot, I just try to concentrate on not quitting, you know,
right.
I feel like just wanting to walk at the end of it, you know,
the part that I go to, doing a lot there is, about 6 to 7 tenths of a mile. I try to use one of those pedometers to actually find out how far it was. And if it's saying it was a 1 mile of a mile, I know that's not right. Because even if my fastest, I could never, you know, to go a quarter of a mile in like, you know, 6 minutes.
Right.
So I know it's more or less closer to 6 to 7 tenths of a mile. But you know, which you're saying, like if you hit that one part, like right in the middle of the line, you literally get the one part of the line that's actually straight uphill. And that is actually killer. You know, one of the funnier things was when I first moved in this neighborhood many years ago, you're a nice little suburban neighborhood, very quiet, you know, there's like one of my neighbors so far, you know. I mean, there's still about a one. So,
I was just weighing myself.
I remember this neighborhood many years ago, really quiet, and, you know, I'm coming pretty much right outside the city, and I'm like, I'm not going to fit in, you know, people are going to look at me weird up here. So, I'm here, and I would go to this meeting before I had finished, you know, I didn't get in for about 5 months after I moved here. So, I would go out every morning for a jog, just to tell you, and I didn't know where the park was, So I was just sort of jogging down the street, go about a couple miles, to come home. So I'm jogging late at Labor Day, so there's really no cars on the street, there's no traffic of people going to work. I'm about a mile from the house, and I took a bad step off the side of the pavement, and I sprained the shit out of my ankle. So now I'm thinking, I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm like, I said, maybe it's not hurt that bad. Let me try jogging again. Well, I could barely walk. So I'm sitting there on the side of the pavement. I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? And I'm like, well, maybe I don't have my cell phone on me. I can't call anybody to pick me up. I said, maybe I can knock on one of the doors and some of the maybe nice people in this neighborhood, maybe somebody can call somebody to pick me up or, I don't know how bad. I didn't get my shoe off. I was like, I don't know if my ankle's broken or not. I'm like, maybe somebody can call me an ambulance. I don't know what to do. And then I thought, and I was like, you know what? It's early September. It's 85 degrees out. I'm in a hooded sweatshirt, a black winter pulled-out hat, and black sweatpants. I look like the ultimate robber. Somebody's going to break in your house and rob and break and kill the shit out of you. I said, and I don't know any people in this neighborhood. And I said, it's kind of a farm area up here, and I'm like, I can imagine if some people that have some shotguns up here, and I can knock on one of the doors and have a double barrel put right up my nose. I ended up walking home over a mile on an ankle, and when I got home, it was about three times its normal size. That ended up putting me out for months. Even when I went to the doctor a couple days later, he's like, you walked on that? And I'm like, yes, sir, over a mile. You are a sick man.
Yeah, well, when my ankle broke, when I jumped over a bonfire up in Norwich, way back in, I guess, 2000 maybe, when I went up there, I was partying all night, drinking up a storm. Obviously, that's what got us to start jumping over the bonfire, was too much drinking. And so after the ankle break, of course, I didn't know it was broken. And I was walking around on it all night, partying, hanging out at the fire, and I just thought I had rolled it, so I didn't think twice about it until I actually got off of it and laid down that night, and I couldn't sleep because it was literally like the size of a softball.
Cool.
So I feel your pain. But other than that, the running and not going to the gym, I have been hitting my little apparatus back for 10 rounds a piece every day. That helps a lot. Usually, like I said, I lose about 8 pounds of water weight doing the run. And I said last week, I think, that I've finally managed to stay under 200 pounds, and I just weighed myself, and I'm actually under 200 with all my clothes on right now. That's awesome. And by the end of the workout, usually I get down to 190 pounds. So, last couple of days, I've noticed by weighing myself after the run and then after the hitting the bag, I actually lose only a fraction of the weight on the bag, hitting the bag, even if I'm all sweatpants out and, hood up and all that. I still only lose 2 or 3 pounds doing the bag, whereas on the run, I lose a minimum of 5 and most of the time 8. So I guess I'm definitely keeping the run in the repertoire. But it's tough. I can't take a day off. I'll slip back over 200 pounds.
Well, I wasn't sure you were calling the kitchen out of the gym, Hell's Kitchen. Because, well, that's what we used to get when I was down in town. Of course, the Barry Anderson Rec Center. That was like a Hell's Kitchen. Like, I remember telling people, I'm like, see how hot it is today? I'm like, oh my God, it's so hot. I'm like, yeah, tonight's like a night where, we close all the windows, we close the door, we turn the heat up. You still got guys in sweatsuits. Are you guys crazy? Well, I'm like, absolutely. With your ass.
Yeah. Well, after these last couple of days, I don't think I'll have a problem with Country Hilly Gym anymore. But getting back to the MMA, we have a couple more events. We just wanted to mention before we try back, Tim. Enough about me. We have a Gladiator Challenge out in Wendover, Nevada, at the Wendover Nugget Casino, and another one they don't have a list of fighters for.
when we go to Tampa, Florida at the USF Sundome for Saturday. Saturday night we have Art of Fighting Damage. Matchups there are Marcio Cruz versus Tom Sauer. Seth Petruzzelli versus Chris Beaton. And I actually just put a blog up on this. Fight Zone TV is going to be covering this. Delson Heleno versus Tyler Stinson. David Yost versus Chris Herring. Jared Card versus Gilbert Burgos. Kevin Abrahante versus Keith McCabe. BJ Gress versus Carlos Gonzalez. Corey Krebs versus Andrew Parker. Joe Wisman versus Niantu Bolo. Dustin Fellows versus Anthony Monick. Now, that is kind of, thought it was interesting that Seth is back in the news here. Seth Petruzzelli is famous for beating Kimbo Slice, of course. It kind of makes me wonder, you know, I would probably retire if I was him after that. But obviously, he's got to make a living. It kind of seems funny to me, though, that he didn't end up on the Ultimate Fighter. Even though Kimbo did, that he beat Kimbo. You know, why doesn't USC take interest in this guy? He beat the crap out of their new star. He's going to be debuting pretty soon here in a few weeks on this Ultimate Fighter show. But I don't know what happened there. Kent, Washington, we have Alliance Fights Counter-Strike at the Showwear Center. And the only matchup they list is Mario Miranda versus Gary Padilla. We go over to the United Kingdom in London at the Troxy. We have Ultimate Challenge UK Payback. Neil Grove versus Marcus Hipp for the heavyweight championship there. And then the light heavyweight championship is also on the line between Jimmy Manua versus Luke Blythe. And then the featherweight championship between Brad Pickett and Dave. Rounding out the card, we have Jake Bostwick versus Jamie Hearn, Asvaran Quazid versus Jason Young, Lee Dosky versus Jermaine Facey, Ashley Pollard versus Irving Daniels, Paul Reed versus Brad Wheeler, Adam Hagel versus Tommy Kelly, Andy Gooch versus Richard Griffin, Alex Harvey versus John Kelly, and Danny Fletcher versus Wesley Johnson. And then the final event on Saturday, we have Mainstream MMA, Minman versus Monaghan in Dubuque, Iowa, at the Diamond Joe Casino. That's there's a Mainstream MMA Light Heavyweight Championship on the line between Minman and Derek Minman and Todd Monaghan, or Monaghan, I don't know how you pronounce that, everybody's different. Evan Marks versus Cole Williams, also on the card. Aaron Hinton versus Jason Sink. Adam Schumacher versus Josh Trowan. Jeremy Castro versus Ryan Vincent. Kyle Goodsman versus Sean Forbes. Ryan Lake versus DJ Stifler. Nathan Birdsill versus Dan Almeida. And Chris Craven versus David Hartline. And we also have couple events in on Sunday. One is Brave FC 3 Impact in Curitiba, Paraná, Brazil at the Paraná Club Gymnasium. No fights listed. And we have DEEP 43 Impact at Korakuen Hall in Tokyo. And we have a featherweight championship and a bantamweight championship on the line in UFC guy Ryo Shonen. Was in UFC 92 and UFC 97, and now he's back over in Japan fighting, so I guess for some reason he didn't like the UFC. Well, I guess because he lost two times.
Sure. Rich, my phone just beeped, so if you can stand, I think he's ready.
Okay. Alrighty then.
Hello?
Sam!
Rich Bergerati is the, you know, the actual host of the show.
How's it going, Tim?
Tim, I did an intro a little bit ago, before we were able to get you on the line. Rich also fought in the 1998 NCAA Finals. He fought at my weight class, 185. He lost to Mike Jordan out of the U.S. Military Academy. And
I think I remember you, Rich.
I knew I wouldn't have done any better against that guy. And I knew that the fights that year, the finals anyway, were on ESPN. So I was so glad I didn't get knocked out on ESPN. And I still got a medal out of it.
Yeah, that was definitely a vicious fighter. I remember that guy.
At the time, I think you're a little bit over 200 pounds, and I think I weighed that one, because Doc was trying to get me,
those extremes, like, I want you to start fighting and catch weight. And I'm like, God, I said, I've normally fought my whole career at like the high 170s, low 180s. But Doc wanted a top notch heavyweight on his team. And I remember I was supposed to fight Dave that night. I don't remember his full name. It's a kid from Penn State. That was fighting him the main fight. And I remember we were getting in the van, and Doc goes, I need a favor from you. I said, favor? What do you want? He goes, would you mind fighting the heavyweight today? I'm like, no, Doc, come on. He goes, no, I need you to do this. I'm like, fine. I'm like, I'll fight whoever. And that's when we matched up. But I remember early in the fight, I always said you have one of the better jabs I've ever fought, because usually I can parry a jab and keep it from landing. And yours was actually pushing my glove back into my face a little bit. And that was really throwing off. And then by the time I finally able to work inside and get the body shots going, you know, I lost too many of the early rounds.
Yeah, I remember that fight, man. That was a very good fight. It was a great learning experience. Again, the guy you're talking about was Dave Herring. Yeah, he's on my team.
Herring, yes. The 190 pounder. I was supposed to fight Dave 2 weeks after that at the Lock Haven show. And when I fought you, I had got a cut in my mouth. And it's from a bad mouth. And then the following week, I got a cut real bad. The doctor stopped the fight because it was bleeding that bad. He wanted me to get stitches, and I wouldn't do it. And then, yeah, and I thought the doctor had put something on my textbook saying that I was ineligible to fight. Because I'm getting ready to fight Dave Herring. And I don't know, one of the kids from Ship said, oh, I heard your fight canceled tonight. And I said, what are you talking about? They said, yeah, failed the physical. And I'm like, oh my God, I failed the physical because the doctor wrote about my mouth being cut. But it was Dave Herring who had like a calcification in his nose or something. But they were worried that if he got shot, he could have dislodged and be in a potentially dangerous situation. And Tim, that is a perfect lead-in to what we're going to talk about tonight.
Okay, well, that situation with David, no, that was for me sparring with him.
Okay.
I remember we were at the Lock Haven. He thought he was going to fight also. He was training to fight.
Yeah,
that
kind of
sucks.
I definitely
want to see
him
go
ahead.
Sorry.
If I remember that correctly, I think that ended his career. I don't remember him fighting after that.
Yeah, he didn't fight after that. Yeah. Because
he was a pretty decent fighter, and him and I would have probably put on a good fight. He was a tall, muscular kid, but he was also a successful defense. I remember scouting him the week before. The figure that I would be fighting, and I was scouting and saying, I'm going to have to come over the top, you know, because he keeps his hands relatively low. And I'm going to have to cut the
quote. Well, definitely, I think he's Army. I know he's Army. I think he's ROTC. So,
yeah, he was.
Yeah, Dave had a lot of experience. Dave could fight. Dave was strong. You know, he and I, we sparred one day, and I just got a little out of hand, and then that's when it's something we can't deviate it. He's a nice guy, he was cool. But yeah, I definitely wanted to see you two go at it though.
Yeah. And I know what you're talking about, you know, sometimes things get heated. Because I'll tell you, I had a lot of problems with the Lock Haven and Chad Morey. Me and him had, some situations because we were all such different personalities. And we used to drive. And Doc used to. With the fighting stuff, he was usually side with me, but on the other stuff, it was Chad was, really a good kid, didn't get a lot of trouble. He was a 4.0 GPA, and he was one of the guys on campus, and good. There's me always into some kind of mischief and out gallivanting and causing ruckus. I was really getting yelled at. But then we caused a lot of, tension on the team. He's like, well, I don't think you'd be more like that. I'm like, well, I don't want to be like that. He's a square to me. And finally, we had to get in the gym and settle it. I'm not gonna tell you who got the better out of Tim, but it wasn't him.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's give Tim a little bit of a little bit of a chance to talk about why he's got a situation here tonight. We got enough Tony and Rich war stories out of the way.
Yeah. Well, I was telling Rich, and because I'm a guy, I really believe that all things happen for a reason. And I'm not a Bible thumper, but I do believe in, things happen for a reason. And it was the day after we spoke, about 2 weeks ago, when you called me, and we were talking about getting you on the show and talking about how you can, some of the services you can do to help players. I got an email from, I don't know if you know him, but it's a former fighter, baseman John Scully. He's a trainer now out of Connecticut.
And
he felt like the run for the world title, and always, man, always, he always has something funny to say, and he's always putting out little stories and little anecdotes and stuff. And the one thing he sent me, he actually sent out a series email, which is kind of sometimes a hard job. And he was talking about a fighter just about a month or so ago in a very tragic situation. It was a young kid, four-round fighter. It was an even matchup. These two guys were fighting, and in the fourth round, the one guy happened to land a three-punch combination, and the other guy went down and did not get up. And, tragically, 24 hours later, he lost his life to a brain injury. And the reason I sent the email out was because this fighter did not have proper insurance. But you were fighting because trying to provide for his family. Now his family didn't even know the hole because not only is the primary breadwinner gone, but now they're trying to, they don't have any compensation, they don't have anything. And I said, this is amazing that I got this email from Iceman Scully less than 24 hours ago, they're speaking to you about the very same topic. And I think, you're looking at, do things specifically for fighting to grow business together and what you can do for, the fight community. So I'm going to give the floor to you right now.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Rich. As we mentioned, as we talked about, I do provide help with, I'm trying to help boxers out more now. I really don't have a huge clientele of boxers, but I'm just really trying to master every service and product that I have to offer. But meantime, spread the word out, contacting some promoters, letting them know that, hey, I'm Tim Scott. I'm a former boxer, national champion, 1998, Penn State. Currently work for John Hancock affiliate, Keystone Financial, and I provide life insurance or life services, I like to call it. I like to call it life services because it's not just about when a person passes away paying for the funerals. We're talking about, leaving a legacy for your children, your spouse, your family. And the cost of it really is really nominally low for the overall benefit. But also annuities, a lot of fighters, I know when I fought and I was trained to become pro, I, came across a lot of different types of people. And, most of those people worked a part-time job or two full-time jobs. So it ranged, but I don't recall a lot of conversations where guys felt like they were secure, or the women I spoke to, they felt secure as far as, winning a world title, what-ifs. And what-ifs is, okay, you provide for your family, but you haven't laid in this day, which basically, for 10 years you're a fighter and you pass away, and those 10 years might have been great with your family, and I'm sure they don't miss you, but during that mourning process, now they have to deal with the next 40 years, and that is the income that would have been missed that they were getting for the past 10 years, and still getting that back. And I also know that home insurance is a big need, but people think that it's very expensive. So you get health insurance, it's the better for you, it's cheaper. And the same thing, provided your life insurance is cheaper. A young fighter in his early 20s and his late teens can certainly put away some money in a permanent product and come out with you know, some cash value also, not just a death benefit that some people look at it. Because a lot of people, as you guys know, they look at life insurance like, oh, I gotta be reminded I'm gonna die one day. But you know, it's inevitable, right? It's inevitable,
right.
But we don't know where we're gonna go.
There's no story with John with a, you know, very skirt that, you know, it includes danger. I mean, it's back for back. I mean, we have a fight where a person takes a sustained beating for, you know, 10, 12 rounds. You can have one, like, a few weeks ago where the guy wasn't, he was winning the fight and he took two punches. A left right boom, and it was just, you know, that type of situation. Also, and I think a common misconception, and you talk to regular people on the street, and you talk to them about the boxing game, they think of guys like Mike Tyson or Oscar De La Hoya and guys like that who are turning around and making, you know, so much. They're making $5 million a fight, they're making $10 million a fight, and Mike Tyson's worth now is because he threw his money away. That's not the case. I mean, majority of fighters you have out there, as you said, Tim, are working people. I remember Charles Heinz Brewer, who was when he put IBM Brewer, and he was a computer analyst because he worked a day job. And this guy was a world champ. So it's not like,
yeah, well,
Charlie, you're a millionaire. That's not the case.
Right. He worked at Advanta Bank, actually. That's where I formerly worked.
Okay.
I worked at a bank, and anywhere I won a world title. And while he was still at the bank, actually basically just resigned from there. But yeah, you're right. He worked for many, many years until he started bringing some more money in. And yeah, I sparred with Charles Brewer quite a few times, actually, down in South Philly. So I'm not very well, but pretty well, you know. And smart guy, bright guy. He wound up on some businesses, you know. So you're right. I mean, he's kind of like the exception to the rule, but you're certainly right. There's a misnomer that people believe that every boxer is affluent and has money in their pocket, and they work from they work 3 hours a day, you know, 4 days a week, and that's not really the case.
Another thing that people really don't understand is, okay, you see a situation where, okay, the fighter A is going to be making a nice purse for this fight, he's making the biggest purse of his career. It's going to be maybe $7,000 or $8,000. Out of that $7,000 or $8,000, he might only see two. And there would be manager fees, trainer fees, taxes, sanctioning, all that. But he's only going to see $2,000 out of that. So it's very much a misconception. So a lot of times you get a lot of these fighters that they fight for two reasons. I mean, they fight for the extra income, obviously, and they fight for the love of the game. They fight for the love of the game. Now, this young guy that tragically lost his life a few weeks ago, he was fighting a four-round fight. Now, he's probably only getting $700 or $800 for that fight.
Wow.
Yeah. For those four-round fights, yeah, no life insurance. They generally contract you for, you know, $100 to $200 on a script per round. So, you might say, okay, you're signing up for $400 for a four-round fight, you might get $800.
Right.
And then,
right.
Out of that, you might get, you know, $250.
That's how it goes.
You're right. Yeah. You know, you're right. I mean, a lot of times these people, they fight for the love of it. You know, they fight for that, you know, that 1 in a million Rocky Balboa opportunity. Another story, and this one's actually, I guess like 7 or 8 years ago, and this is also very sad. Once again, I don't remember the fighter's name. I remember reading about this. The guy, he was, out kind of on the West Coast area. He's a trailer fighter, you know, losing record, whatever was going to make a big time. And found out that his mother had passed away in the Cleveland area. So now he's got to get close to get from where he lives in, say, like, the Nevada area in Cleveland. So where he did was he took a fight in Salt Lake City. So he could get enough money to pay for the trip to get to Cleveland. He was never a great fighter, and he was never in great shape. He died from a heart attack in the first round.
Come on.
in the park,
wow.
In the ring, and died. So by him just trying to get those last few $100 to pay final respect for his mother, he passed away.
Yeah.
And when we were speaking a couple of weeks ago, and these were thoughts that were running through my head, you know. And I mean, I follow the boxing game very closely, if we made possibly one change to help somebody out, I think we've done a service.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely agree. I mean, people just need to understand just really it's paramount to have that support because if you don't have that security, you know, it's like everything you've built in your life is basically, it's useless, it's worthless at that point because what we're saying is going to take most of it, you know. Not that you're lucky to have anything, you know. That goes for not just boxers, but people with money. You know, you have to secure that. You know, that's something, those assets you want to secure. Life insurance is a great way of doing that, and annuities are as well. And definitely for fighters, health insurance. You know, health insurance is another key component to security for your family. And because if you get hurt boxing and you work a part-time job, you know, 9 out of 10 times you're not going to have any type of health insurance, you know. And then now you're not going to go to, you know, you have a broken nose and now it's getting infected, or you have a big tongue, or, you know, or you got stretched, you know, in the eye. Now you're out for weeks and weeks. Now you lost your part-time job. Now you're back at square one because you couldn't go and get the preventive, you know, infectious type of thing,
right.
Process taken care of initially, you know, and preventive care, you know. So, you know, I've seen boxers where you see them one day and then you don't see them for a while, and then, you know, maybe 2 years later you see them and they're like, man, while I was out, you know, I couldn't get in the ring anymore because I couldn't afford health insurance, so I didn't have health insurance, so I didn't want to take a chance of getting hurt, you know. And it's really a misconception what people have as to how much it would cost to take care of yourself, you know. Stop eating as much junk food. I mean, it's all part of the same circle, you know. That's your cycle. That cycle that everyone lives, you know. You have to be healthy, you have to be mentally healthy, and with that comes security. And if you're not secure in everything else, if you know when you die today or tomorrow that your family, you don't know what they're going to do, then you're insecure. You definitely have a subconscious mind, and, you know, you don't want to take that into the ring.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, you know. I've been there, you know, because you've been in fights where you're like, man, I could die in the ring today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'm willing to die today because that's what's on the line right now, you know, my life, because this guy is not going to let me win this title, you know, this championship or whatever, you know what I mean? And, you know, just sparring in the ring, I mean, you spar more than you fight during the course of a year, typically, you know, and you should have
been anywhere.
I mean, there's
some weeks you might spar up to, you know, 20-25 rounds.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
And people say, you know, you're wearing bigger gloves. And you're wearing, you know, and people have a misconception about headgear, because all headgear does is really prevent you from getting cut. Actually, what it does is when your head gets snapped, there's maybe an additional 6 to 8 more ounces on your head that's, you know, snapping back with it with the weight of that headgear. So, yeah, and the headgear you're still taking the blows.
Absolutely. You're still taking the blows. If you go right down the middle or right up to the chin, you know, obviously that's not even padded. You know, so
right.
That's just to keep the critics down, you know.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Because at one point they weren't using headgear, you know, for practicing.
Look,
you know, so sparring.
The 6 Olympics with Sugar Ray Leonard. They didn't wear headgear.
Right. Yeah, they didn't. Didn't wear the headgear, so definitely understand that. But, you know, back to the life insurance, you know, it's kind of like, you know, be secure in your life, you know, understand that there are people who care about you, and, you know, if you were to go today or tomorrow, they're going to mourn, but while they're mourning, at least
you know, have it where, you know, they can go and do something they need to do, you know. Which
right,
is
exactly.
You know,
so, if something happens right there, instead of you taking care of them, you're actually what you're in essence doing. If you don't have coverage like that, is you're digging them into a hole. So you're not, you know, helping them. So I mean, you're really, you know, you're starting them out, you know, 100 yards behind in the race.
That you are, and there's so many people who, you know, just don't understand that. But the few people that do understand that, they usually come from a long line of people who had insurance, and they've actually gained assets over the years. So usually those people are the ones who, you know, you just smell, you know what I mean? They have that air about them, that confidence, because they know that they're covered, their family is covered. Because I know I can't live with myself if I'm just, you know, he took my job and just giving me $10,000. I mean, that's just, I mean, that's the minimum for a funeral right now. I mean, you know,
I mean, I won't say middle, it's like the average, I say, for a funeral, you know, between 10 and 12, right? So, you know, if you have a insurance policy that's short of that amount, or just that amount, it's going to cover the rest of the mortgage, you know, the rest of the car payments, the rest of the utility bills, food bills, the kids going to soccer class bills, you know what I mean? Gas bills for driving kids to soccer class and camps and, you know, because life goes on. I mean, those survivors are just that. They're surviving. But like you said, if you don't secure yourself and your family, then next thing you know, man, a tragedy happens, because they can happen. But this is a way of making sure that you're prepared in that case if that happens. And there's ways that, you know, you can even earn cash value while you're paying a premium. So, you know, a lot of people, you know, think, well, you know, I was paying for nothing until I die, and then my family gets it, so what? You know, well, if you feel like that, then you're selfish. You probably shouldn't be having this conversation, because, you know, I'm not going to try to change your thought process, because obviously, you know, you're just not the type of person that, you know, you're not a caring person.
Right.
A caring person is going to say, well, at least think that, you know, all right, well, I can maybe put a couple of cents, I'll put $5,000 in the bank. You know, to earn interest, and, you know, and I'll get that, and I'll pass it on to them. That's great. But again, that's, you know, how many people get put that up, you know, put any money up in the bank and say, hey, I'm going to transfer it over to, you know, my family member. You know, a lot of people, you know, they just don't understand that when it's all said and done, life goes on, and all the bills have to be paid. And then, you know, you don't want your kid who was going to go to college because you had a 529 for them, or not even a 529, I'm going to use an example of 529. Because you and your wife had your spouse had a great savings account, and you were receiving an earnest interest, and you did a couple things, you had a 401k, whatever. But when it's all said and done, you know, that money, you don't really want to touch until you get X amount of years. You know, you want to use that for retirement. You want to use that in short term, get out of jail free card, you know, for lack of a better word. You know what I mean? They want to use that as a freebie to get you out of the rut. You know, because what's going to happen, and your kids, like I was going to early, now, they were going to go to college, you know, their tuition is probably cut down three quarters. That's fast. You know, it's just that fast. Good thing, you never know. I mean, it just, things happen so quickly. It's a gradual process where things just decrease, and usually that's a depletion of one saving account, you know. And going back to boxers specifically, normally, I won't say normally, but the average boxer is probably living from paycheck to paycheck. And, you know,
yeah.
Let's face it, you know. It's not a sport for guys who are going to be going to college, typically. You know what I mean? I think that we were part of a movement that college guys were good boxers, and then began to get that respect for the other people who wanted to be like that. They tried to go into these little schools like community colleges to kind of get things together and test the waters. And I mean, they tell those kids and they tell them to kill their cousins, and people started moving on. And I tell you what, I mean, there's not so many people now who aren't boxers that have, it's not unheard of, right, that you hear a boxer with a couple masters now. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
doctors,
right.
And everything else. You know, so this phenomenon really wasn't, it's just becoming more popular in the late 90s, you know, especially now. And
Back in the day, it was so unusual when James Bellcrusher Smith was the only heavyweight champion of the world with a college degree. And even the Klitschko brothers don't have, you know, master's degrees. They're doctors of sports administration. In fact, the one guy that we were talking about tonight, we've interviewed a few times, was one of my old friends, Walk Amon. He started after you and I graduated, but Chuck Passaccio was a couple-time national champion. He's a school teacher.
Wow, very nice.
The other teacher we spoke to 2 weeks ago, Josh Mercado, he's a multiple-time national champion, Walk Amon. He was a college graduate from then, and he just turned pro. I mean, we were lucky to be a Dr. Cox. Everything was just being the ends on us, even, you know. Hang up. We don't got a class.
Definitely did a great job, though, I must say.
Difficult. Tim, one thing I'm going to ask, just as I told you when we had a talk a few weeks ago, our shows, we're taping now. We're going live tonight at 11 o'clock, so anybody can listen to us live then. Then our shows are archived on our website. So anybody that listens, you know, or plugs into our website can listen to the show. And it's kind of like it's recorded, so they say, okay, we're going to listen to Tony and Rich and Burr and talk about what fights are upcoming. Let's get to the interview. They can fast forward right to it. So, okay, I want to put out there right now, for anybody listening to this interview, what is and if they're interested, maybe say, hey, I want to talk, you know, about a policy where I can, you know, get an insurance, whether health insurance or life insurance or something like that. What is the best thing for them to do?
I would say the best thing for them to do would be to contact you. I'm thinking for educating people, but also try to provide a product. I give them a service, a product, and part of my service is education, so I give them full education. So I wouldn't trust them just, you know, go online looking for anything, so I would give them a contact which you can do for now.
Okay.
And my telephone number, the firm is 610-530-2112, and my extension is 260.
Okay. And everybody, if you listen to this, you go ahead and call us and ask for Kim Scott. And so we were talking, before we had Tim on the air, you were talking about something you heard that one of the MMA organizations was doing.
Well, it's actually all extreme sports, and I thought Tim might be interested in this, but it's called XSI, Extreme XTREME, spelled that way, sports insurance. And they're starting to cover MMA fighters and boxers with all kinds of insurance. So that might be somebody you might want to network with. And I actually know a guy, the guy who does the MMA AdNet, which is like one of those scripts that puts different banner ads up on your site every time, you know, somebody refreshes the page, it changes. That guy has started this MMA Fight Council thing, and they're right on the main front page of this Extreme Sports Insurance company, so they're working together. So I have an in with the Extreme Sports Insurance guys if you need it.
Oh, really? Okay.
So he could probably connect you directly to them. I'll send his number over to Tony for you.
Okay, it'll be great, Rich, if you could do that. I really appreciate that. So you said the website is www.extreme.com? Or?
No, it's actually, let's go to the home page. It's actually very short. I think it's XSI. No www. It's just http://blog.xsi-now.com.
Okay. Make sure that they're right. Blog.xsi-now.com.
Yep.
Okay. .xsi-now.com.
X
S-I. Sam?
Okay. Okay, great. Glad I asked. Okay. Yeah, it's hard to tell with the difference between the X and the S. But,
oh, yeah.
All right, so blog.xxi -now.com.
Right.
Okay, perfect. I really appreciate this.
Yeah,
you guys are awesome.
And Tim, I wanted to ask you real quick before we get on the line. We got actually a few minutes here. We got about 10 minutes left in the show, but you know, we'll keep you on for as long as we can. I wanted to ask you what you think about this whole health insurance thing that the government's fighting over.
Wow, you know, that is a tough one. You know, the whole political realm is definitely a very touchy situation. I don't know enough about Obama's, you know, I won't call it social reform, but I'll say it's healthcare reform. I don't really know much about it. I do know we're moving toward this administration, but I as far as health insurance goes, I mean, you know, there's people that say it's going to be great, you know, and there's opponents that say, you know, no, it's going to be opposite. It's going to be, you know, opponents that say it's going to be terrible because old people, they're going to be the first to go now. They're going to just be in the line of death, you know, and, you know, it's like, who would tell me the truth? All I know is that I don't know enough about Obama's healthcare reform to really, I know I want a couple websites. I can probably check and read it all through. But from what I do know, which I feel pretty secure in knowing about it, I'm not really swayed one way or the other, you know what I mean? As a professional in the field, I would say, you know, it's definitely not going to be good for the business of people selling on insurance, but certainly, you know, the citizens will be able to benefit from it, from what it sounds like. It sounds like it's going to cost some money, but it sounds like it's going to be part of a whole change to come. So, I don't know if I answered that, but I'm trying to tap the dance around it too much, but, you know.
I try to keep the political things, you know, to sit over dinner or sitting
with a tribal group.
Right, yeah. I know, it is one of those things that, you know, people are obviously very vehement about, you know, in their stances. I was actually just kind of sitting here working on my computer one day, and I didn't realize how many of these town hall meetings had been going on, and I'm watching CNN one day, and I just had to watch the TV. I'm looking up, and this guy is ripping into some congressman. And it's been, like, great TV for that. You know, you see these people, they just get up in arms about this stuff. And I've been more impressed by that, that people are willing to go out and confront these people like that and call them for what they are. I mean, this guy was calling the guy every name in the book and saying that, you know, he called the senator's office and he was told he was going to be given a chance to speak. And now he's been told he's got to take a number and, you know,
I think so, yeah.
It was actually the one with Arlen Specter, I think, now that I remember.
Yeah, the guy was just yelling at him.
That was great, though. All the stuff that has come of it is great, because one thing that I remember from the campaign was Obama saying that, hey, listen, we're going to make this thing so that everybody can agree with it, you know, and that everybody can benefit from it. So what we're going to do is we're going to have debates on C-SPAN, he said. And actually, you know, flat out said that we're going to talk about this on C-SPAN before we even come up with a bill. Now, all of a sudden, he's got the bill and he's trying to ram it down everybody's throats, and they're talking about doing it even if they don't get the support of all the Republicans. So I'm thinking, you know, this guy just totally, I mean, he totally went back on all his promises. And
that's what I'm hearing. Also, you know, people are saying the same thing. Obama wanted to do a huge mess. You know, this country has been up in tumultuous times, I guess, before the market even, you know, hopefully it has. But, you know, healthcare has been an issue for many years. A lot of administrations haven't really, in the past, stood up for what they said was during the times they were running the office, you know. But I think that's pretty historical about people that tell you what you want to hear, and then, you know, they that kind of pacifies one, and then you kind of move on. But as far as Obama goes with, I don't like all his promises. I think it's going to be a long time coming. You know, I don't think the first years we're going to see much of an increase in improvement, I should say. You know, I think it'll be a gradual increase, but I don't think it'll be anything, you know, huge anytime soon. I just hope he doesn't make, like any other president, I don't want president to make any mistake that we all will regret later, you know, because...
Well, something like that, I mean, you almost don't want it to be political at all, because, I mean, it's bad enough with the health insurance now. It's, you know, with the pharmaceuticals not approving these generic drugs until, you know, the patents run out for the original ones, and, you know, the whole thing with senior citizens having to get their drugs from Canada for a while there. I mean, you've had all these things that have put up red flags about, you know, how bad it is already. And I just can't get over some of these commercials even, you know, for the pharmaceuticals where now it's like, you know, one of the side effects is death, and they're just like rushing over it like it's nothing. I did a story for a humor magazine online a few years ago about a drug. There was actually a real drug that I was basing the story on that's supposed to be all natural. I'm actually taking it now. It's called 714X, and my cousin took it to beat cancer. And it took, she was given 3 weeks to live. And basically what it does is it cleans out your lymph system, gets all the toxins out of your body, and it's got no side effects. So anyway, I wrote the story as a satire saying that, you know, George Bush had approved this new drug that is used against 296 different degenerative diseases, which 714X can't be used for. But, you know, this was the satire was, you know, I was going to put this drug out there as a fake story and then, you know, have all the side effects if it were a pharmaceutical drug. So I got all the side effects, and I listed one of the side effects as mild to moderate death. And at the time, it was really funny, but now it's almost, it's not funny because they're saying that on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm starting to take notice of that. Maybe some years ago, I studied Health Policy Administration in college initially before I graduated with a business degree. But I studied Health Policy Administration, so you know, while I was kind of being consumed in the whole, you know, who's all the top doctors get paid and how much money they get paid, you know, I'm missing out on the pharmaceutical companies. I didn't really think about it, you know, but I did as years went on. You know, reading the newspaper, just keeping up with the facts. You know, and it's just phenomenal how, you know, like you said, as far as these patents, you know, these pharmaceutical companies are holding on to these patents, you know, and the government is allowing them to hold on to them for so many years, and they keep it at, you know, at their high prices. You know, and when a generic drug that just works just as well, you know, it's out there, and but it won't be released. To that patent, you know, and only to exactly what you said. It's a matter of to me, you know, and this is a matter of opinion, of course, is that, you know, it's the almighty dollar, and the almighty dollar goes to, you know, he who has the power, and it usually comes from those who will benefit most from it, you know, and, you know, power is money. The money is power.
This 714X thing, I mean, it's like, it's like I said, it's all natural, non-toxic, and it only costs you $400 per 21-day supply. So, you know, it's like, it's like a little injection you go into your groin area, right? And when I took it, it's supposed to be preventive, too, which is even better. I mean, can you imagine the money that would be saved? I believe in the product, and I'm sure it is what it is. You know, if you had a preventive like this put out to the general population early on, and you didn't have to worry about all these degenerative diseases popping up, you could save tons and tons of money, but it is the almighty dollar. And when I first started researching this, I read this book called The Cancer Industry by a guy named guy named Ralph Moss, who's a medical doctor. And he really opened my eyes to how, you know, that there's all kinds of doctors who will tell you, you know, there's no such thing as this, you know, conspiracy to not cure cancer. You know, we do want to cure cancer, but, you know, there's a lot of big companies that deal in chemotherapy and radiation and the way things have been done for 50 years. And they're not going to change, because you know, they're making money. So I would rather see them tackle those type of issues than, you know, try to just give everybody blanket coverage for the status quo. There's not enough talk about this stuff that's much less expensive. This doctor that created this stuff, he makes it available for $400 for that 21-day supply. They only need 6 to 8 cycles of that to actually cure cancer and other degenerative diseases.
Wow.
And then,
how long has it been around?
It's been around since, I want to say, the late 70s. And it only went to the mainstream media back in the 90s because the person that my cousin heard about it from ran away from home to avoid chemo. And he was on 2020 and all over the news. And he actually was back in the news when that kid, Daniel Hauser, ran away with his mom because the judge ordered that he had to have chemo. And, you know, they thought he was hiding with this kid who had taken 714X. And, I mean, it's just incredible stuff.
Yeah,
you'd think that they should study that kind of stuff more. And this doctor who created it, he doesn't do any advertising. That's why you haven't heard of it. I mean, think about how much money the pharmaceuticals would be able to save and pass on to the consumer if they didn't have these freaking blockbuster commercials for these, you know, erectile dysfunction drugs all over the place. And that's the thing. It's like it's an elective thing now. You know, you have health insurance. Now you're getting more elective drugs than you are getting actual curative stuff. And then every drug that has all these side effects makes you almost need other drugs for the side effects.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. Yeah, you definitely have to be cognizant of the fact that drugs have side effects. I mean, they really literally can kill you, you know, so many side effects. But you're right. They have to disclose that, but they do a lot of times just mutter over it really quickly. Like, be true, but make you look fine, though. You'll be able to perform at a high rate.
Last night, the best one I saw was last night. I forget what product it was, but it was some kind of nasal spray. And the main side effect is bloody nose. Like, yeah, you don't have any allergies, but you got a bloody nose all over the place.
I don't really feel like
career for me. This is not a job. This is a career because I'm happy to do it. Like, I'll get up in my car and I'll drive from here to New York. You know, from here to West Coast, doesn't matter. As long as it's want to help someone out, you know?
Well, we got 4 minutes left here on the show, so I just want to do a quick wrap up. You got any final thoughts or anybody you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to all those Penn State alumni and current students and people who didn't make it through the system. We still love you. but go to Penn State this year and Rock Haven as well. And, to all the Rock Haven guys as well, I do a couple of you guys out there, so contact me. I'm on Facebook, yeah, but I am on Twitter. And, all the information I guess you guys can get from Tony and Rich. But, certainly give me a call. I do have my business line. Give me a call at the firm. I promise I'll do my best to just, help you out as much as I can. Even if it's nothing but,
All right.